Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Now, here's your hosts, Jazz and David. But before that, let's listen to the quote of the day.
We're going to make mistakes. You got to own them. Then you got to make amends. And then you got to move on. Guilt and regret kills many a man before their time. So turn the page, get off the ride. You are the author of the book of your life.
Welcome to the show once again. We have got a very special guest on the show today. This space is personally close to my heart a little bit, which is technology. And our guest today works in that space. She is the CEO of a company called Imvelo. And that deals in the AI space, AI and robotics. Shana, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jazz, for that warm welcome.
And I've, as always, got my wonderful co-host with me, David, who was so keen to join the party this time that the minute I told him that it's AI, he jumped off the chair. Cheers.
David. Cannot miss the party on this one, mate. Thanks for your invite.
this is going to be a very interesting one. Look, Shana, really do appreciate for you to jump on share your time with us. Just quickly on your background a little bit, you're a member of a space industry forum. You are CEO of Imvelo.ai, which is what we're going to discuss a little bit today. And you're a board member of University of Queensland Chemical Engineering, correct?
That is correct.
And in the past, you have worked as a program director at BHP. Tell us about Imvelo a little bit, Shana.
Yeah, Jazz. I mean, so Imvelo, which for the listeners, often people ask me where the name come from, is Zulu for ecosystem. So what Imvelo is doing is we are working on what's called value chain automation. So in all of these industries, particularly the industries I'm from, mining, forestry, agriculture, the supply chains are actually not operating in an integrated fashion today. So what that means, for instance, in mining is that the mining, you might be drill and blast, you might be extracting the ore, you might be trucking the ore and then processing the ore and then sending it through your logistics chain. And all of those processes today are actually operating not probably as efficiently and as productively as they can. So what Imvelo is focused on is the use of AI and robotics. So we're heavily involved in automation. And how does automation combined with data analytics actually be able to create an integrated, which is why we call it a value chain. It kind of moves from being a supply chain then to truly being a value chain that can be responsive to market conditions and customer demand. So that's the space that Imvelo is working in. So Imvelo, we started up around middle of last year. Prior to that, I've got about a 20-year history, as you said, in BHP. And so I'm a co-founder of Imvelo, together with my business partner, Alan Bai, who's based in Perth.
Right. Okay. There's a lot of talk, Shana, in the AI space that it poses. There's obviously some opportunities, but at the same time, there are some threats that it poses, right?
Yep.
You are working in this space actively. How do you see some of that stuff panning out in the future?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, you can tell I'm obviously a fairly person who's probably more a half glass full type person. So I don't, tend to focus so much on the negatives of the technology. But like all things in life and technologies in the wrong hands, these things can be problematic. No different to nuclear weapons and these sort of things. But I think the opportunity very much that's coming from AI and robotics is really, it's all about people in the workforce. I'm a real people-orientated approach in the way I deliver projects. So what we're trying to do is use the technology so that people are not working on transactional type work anymore. I mean, there's a lot of work, as you can imagine, in forestry and mining that's very laborious. For instance, driving a truck. If you drive a truck in mining, you drive the same route. You do that, 50 times a day. You do it every shift. it would have to be, I think, one of the most boring jobs. So a lot of the things we're doing in artificial intelligence is removing that type of transactional work, but also it has a benefit of keeping people safer. So big equipment and people don't mix, you know, and we need to actually get people out of the way of being, you know, working in big equipment. It's how, you know, industries like forestry and ag and mining, we kill people, you know, each year in heavy equipment. So for me, the opportunity far outweighs the risk in that we can, you know, basically get people out of boring jobs, make them safer. But it's not about less people in the workforce. Yeah, AI and robotics often gets a bit of a bad rap that people think that it's, you know, it's replacing jobs and, you know, the takeover of the robots and I won't have a job anymore. And it's absolutely the opposite. In our deployments of AI and robotics, we find we're generating lots more jobs than we're actually taking away. Because if you think about the people in the backdrops who are generating the software, making the hardware and maintaining the solutions, you know, and then optimizing the process because you've got a lot more ability to do that. You know, there's actually a lot more people that we, you know, put into a business than we actually take out. So, yeah, you know, as I said, there's always going to be people, Jazz, who use technology for the worst. But I think absolutely it's a better thing for society and certainly for people in the workplace.
Awesome. When I look at my kids, like, and then look at what's happening in AI, and my kids are only 6 and 3, right? And as they grow up, I try and figure out what's the world going to look like for them, right? What kind of training do they need for this? I mean, what sort of skill sets are required? Or even for an old horse like me?
Don't look so old, Jazz.
I just keep up with my looks, that's all.
You used to look younger without the beard, let's put it that way.
But jokes apart, on a serious note, I mean, what sort of things they should be preparing themselves for in terms of the skill sets and all to embrace this new technology and work in this place, basically?
Yeah, it's such a good question, Jazz, because I think what most people revert to when they answer that question is, you know, it goes without saying that, you know, people are going to need a larger digital skill set than what they've had in the past. And I think all of us, certainly, you know, I'm in my mid-40s, these things even, new to my, you know, I didn't grow up with, you know, the technologies that are there today. So we all have to be learning on the job. We need to have an inquiring mind to actually get those digital skills. But I'm kind of the background that it really that you can go and do any type of background degree or training, and that's good. Obviously, there's different types of skills and that are coming through more in robotics and AI that you can do. But what's more important, I think, is your ability to actually work in teams, you know, in the workplace, and to be able to understand your value proposition, because we're certainly going to move to more of a gig, you know, a gig economy, not probably as much like me being in BHP for 20 years, and I worked with people who'd worked their entire life in BHP. I think those days are gone. So I think it's really important for the young people to understand that value proposition they've got, but also be able to have the social skills to be able to be able to work confidently and inclusively, you know, in diverse teams, because that's really where the world is going, I think, for our young people. And I guess the other thing I can say, Jazz, is it's not all about doing high-end degrees. That's absolutely good, and we need people doing those. But equally, when you look at the areas of, you know, these industries, pictures are on my banner here for Invelo, you know, the agriculture and the forestry, these robots don't work in the field without being maintained. And so there's a huge requirement for people of trades backgrounds who can maintain those solutions. And we tend to find they're people who have usually often they've done some sort of electrical background because they're able to maintain the connectivity, you know, the wireless networks, you know, the actual equipment on the machines. So equally, you know, people should not think they all have to go off and do a degree. It's really also about being able to have a trade that is useful to be able to maintain some of these higher end solutions.
So sounds like the future is still good for them. I don't need to worry too much about it.
No. You've still got a place in this world, Jazz.
How does this work? I know you have been working along with David on some of the AI stuff in the property space, right? And we'll touch on that as well. But before that, how does this help reshape the smart cities and the property development to some extent, right? So what does the future cities look like in terms of if the AI is fully up and operational in 10 to 15 years? And actually, I'm keen to hear what sort of time frame we are talking here where we see the AI to be mainstream or commercial, fully commercialized kind of thing.
Yeah, so I think smart cities is such an interesting area, and Australia's probably not tackling this as well as, you know, our overseas counterparts, particularly in Europe. There's quite a few, call them lighthouses or test beds, you know, in certain cities around the world. They're doing them in the Netherlands, in Italy, lots of places are doing them. So, you know, so a smart city is really, one of those cities that is, you know, obviously more connected, operates using mobility solutions or, you know, autonomous vehicles, but it also has smart infrastructure. So that everything is connected and talking to each other. Because as I said, that's, you know, an autonomous car can drive around in its best state if it actually does, the infrastructure doesn't move, you know, be it certain signposts and those things can actually be embedded with AI and actually be talking to mobile equipment or mobile cars that are going around. So that's really the definition of a smart city. And like everything, it has to serve a purpose around what people want in a smart city. You know, Uber only came about due to demand. You know, I think we can all sit and hypothesize technically about what these things could be, but it's user demand that will shape them in the future. I think for timeframes for smart cities, I still think we are a fair way away, actually, mainly not so much because of the technology, but obviously there's quite a lot of issues around autonomous vehicles, around insurance, liability and ethics, you know, which comes back to your AI question, you know, really around, you know, if there's going to have to be, you know, some sort of collision that obviously autonomous vehicles can't even avoid, how do the autonomous vehicles negotiate to work out who comes out worse? You know, is it the car with the three kids or is it the car with the two older people, grandparents? Or do you know what I mean? So there's many ethics issues that underpin the technology, but also I think insurance and that. So I kind of think, I mean, certainly they're progressing these in overseas. I think we're kind of more in that 10-year timeframe for smart cities. I know Hitachi's doing quite a lot in Greater Western Sydney. When I said Australia isn't doing much, that wasn't very fair, but they're only just kicking off. But, yeah, Greater Western Sydney and if the brand new airport gets up, that whole area is a focus. New South Wales is trying to drive a smart cities approach there. But, you know, I'm not so much an expert in smart cities, I suppose, in society. What I'm so passionate about is how do we accelerate that journey, particularly here in Australia. We have such a unique opportunity because of our agriculture and mining industry. The challenge a little bit about smart cities is, you know, those things I flagged. When you move into mining, as an example, you're in a controlled environment. So you don't have a mother pushing a pram in front of traffic or in front of a crossing, in front of an autonomous vehicle. So it's a very controlled environment. And really for me, they're the best opportunity for us to accelerate a smart cities concept. Mm-hmm. Because as I said, at the moment, the industry is just driving around automated trucks, which, you know, is good. It's good from a safety perspective. But really what we need to move to is how do I autonomously control the mining mission? Because that's really what it's about. It's not about does a truck move around automated. That's, you know, that's kind of pretty cool. But it's actually how do I extract the ore and send it to the right downstream process or to waste, you know, and do that smart and efficiently. So, you know, so I think there's such an opportunity for mining and ag to become, you know, these test beds for a smart city. And you can actually start to build up the autonomy as well as the decision automation, you know, across the top, the kind of big brain, you know, type aspects. You can actually build that up in that environment, and it would create, you know, a lot of acceleration of the technology back into smart cities. So, yeah, it's an area I'm pretty passionate that we keep driving that conversation and what I see as an advantage for, you know, here in Australia.
Mm-hmm. If I was to draw three dots, one for the AI and one for the IoT and one for the blockchain, I always try and think of how these three can be connected together, because they're going to get connected. It's the world's going to be connected, right? So through IoT, AI, and money, without money, it's nothing moves. So it's that somewhere blockchain is going to come in that space, right? Do you have any thoughts on how this, or do you see this getting connected in the future, or it's still pretty early and unclear kind of thing?
Yeah, well, as I said, I think a lot of what I've been talking about is definitely that connection of AI into IoT. So as I said, if you're going to use basically, you know, smart equipment, you know, and AI at the edge of equipment, then you connect that into an IoT platform, which allows you to start to control this mission. You know, the equipment can talk to each other at a transactional level with smarts at the edge, but the IoT is essentially where you can actually start to optimize and have more real-time response to the pull of demand in whatever process you are talking about. But I think you're exactly right, Jazz. You know, we're doing quite a lot of work at the moment for a big major port. And these things are not connected. And this is kind of what Invelo's most interested in, is accelerating the integration of these wonderful technologies, because the technologies themselves are actually quite advanced, but there's been very little progress on integrating them. And I guess, you know, one of the reasons for that, there has been some impediment, and it's a little bit around the challenges, you know, of the technologies, and it's really around what's called open interoperability. You probably might hear those terms if you work around technology enough. And that's saying that, you know, the reason they aren't integrated today is because we have too many closed proprietary solutions coming out from vendors or OEMs, which is the original equipment manufacturers. They're locking down the environment. They might develop a technology and they lock it down and do not allow the technology, you know, they're not supporting APIs at the interfaces for their technology to interface into someone else's technology. And they're also locking down data flow. So they're not allowing anyone else but often themselves to own the data, even though you might have bought a piece of equipment. You don't. They own the data and you've got to buy the data back. This stuff's just really silly. I know it might be a money model for them, but what we need is data flowing freely from the sensors on the equipment, you know, right up into the IoT space. And I guess I'm not as much an expert on the financial market, so I'll leave that to you guys as experts. But blockchain certainly one of the biggest other challenges for these technologies is cybersecurity. So it's a huge challenge. You would hear about it, you know, a lot these days. I mean, even Zoom, you know, was getting hacked into, you know, when it was operating, particularly through COVID, as a new green, I guess, platform. So cybersecurity is a big challenge. And if you think about mining or agriculture or autonomous vehicles in a smart city, it poses a big cybersecurity threat when you talk about malicious intent with AI, that's where it'll come from. It will be people who hack the system and they want to drive your 300-ton mining truck or trucks, you know, on your behalf. So that's a real problem. And really, I'm not an expert in the area, but certainly I know blockchain in satellite communications. So obviously, we're using satellite comms now, particularly in these rural areas, to create much better connectivity, which was also a challenge for the industry for quite a while, but satellite coverage now is you know, fixing that. But I know they're applying blockchain. There's early R&D for blockchain on satellites, because essentially that will allow you to, you know, to a degree, chop up your message, you know, and not, you know, it won't be so easy for people to hack into, you know, into your autonomous equipment. And then the other place I think for blockchain is responsible mining. There's a lot of use of blockchain starting to come to ensure that where mineral resources have been extracted, it has been done responsibly, you know, not with the use of obviously, you know, slavery and these sort of things. So I know that that's another use.
Yeah. No, it's I think you made a very important point over there, which was the openness of the systems. So rather than being closed-ended systems, it's more going to be open-ended systems. And that's what, to some extent, blockchain is doing as well, which is open-based source code. Anyone can go and audit it. It's got its own challenges without a doubt. But
just for our listeners, I guess, is there a IoT? Like, I guess, Shana, would you be able to explain to our listeners what IoT is for those people who's not familiar, the Internet of Things?
Yeah, so really it's around connecting, you know, connecting devices or connecting equipment, you know, into a, you know, into an integrated, you know, landscape. I think people, your home will soon be an IoT. It is, you know, you're exactly right, David, a term that's kind of bandied around. I don't use it a lot in mining. We tend to talk more about this, you know, obviously, being able to pull data from many places, and obviously there's so much more data coming off equipment and everything now. I mean, if you've got an autonomous truck, the amount of data that comes off is mind-blowing off all the sensors. So it's being able to pull that data up and actually be able to turn data into knowledge, into insights. Yeah, for me, that's kind of what IoT really means, because what you've got is you've got people who are trying to run a manufacturing plant or a plantation field or a, you know, mine, and so that, you know, they need to work, I guess, in that IoT space, but be able to be provided with essentially, you know, key flags that things are an issue, and they can actually take action on those. So I always bring it back to the people, not so much about just the technology.
It's a great explanation. Thank you.
Moving on to the next one. You guys have been working with, I think, Bluegum Property, doing some projects, some AI projects in that space. Really keen to understand, how is AI being used in the property space, in the property development space, if we can touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, sure, Jazz. I mean, I wouldn't profess that it's being used nowhere near as much as it could be. So, Bluegum Property is the business that my husband David owns. So we have this wonderful, interesting household, you know, of a person who's CEO of an automation robotics, you know, company working in many industries, because I do work in all those industries I mentioned. I don't, even though I have a mining background, I'm working in all those industries now, because the technology transcends actually all of those spaces. But so the Bluegum Property portfolio is really looking at, I guess, how do we actually look at developments, property developments, and the use of that land in ways that can support the needs of, you know, different I suppose, requirements of people. So, you know, obviously there's a lot of people out there who are aged communities. Certainly when you look at the smart cities that are forming in Europe, they actually are built on the back of more aged communities. is actually where they're creating and developing the technology, because you have an ecosystem there of, you know, creating some housing, but you also can start putting the smart city, the autonomous little buses into that, because again, it's a little bit closed environment like a mine where you kind of can control the environment and go faster with the development of the technology. So I'm really quite passionate about Australia in its property development working out for some of these opportunities for either disabled living or the aged living. How do we actually start to create, you know, these properties that more suit the needs and of what people require? They may not drive, they may have disability issues, you know, but within their own gated, you know, kind of property development, they can hop on an autonomous bus, you know, go down to the IGA, go to their doctor, you know, that they have some, you know, usually people with disabilities won't travel as wide and far. But I do think there's an opportunity for property development and councils and town planning to really actually start thinking about mobility solutions, particularly for people in that area. So Blue Gum, we have a large amount of property up at the Caboolture area that we've done, David's done a lot of series of option contracts on. It's a significant amount of land now up there. It's very close to the train station. It is all flat. It would be a wonderful precinct for, a little smart city for either disabled or aged, you know, aged living. So, yeah, they're the sort of things that, interestingly, in our household, we get to talk about these things because, you know, I guess we bring some experience and skills from both ends of that.
I'm hoping it's just a talk, not a fight.
Yeah,
on the dinner table every night.
A few debates, Jazz, a few debates.
Yeah. So what are some of the obvious challenges that you're seeing, Shana, in that space?
I think, as I said, Jazz, I mean, I've touched on a few of them with the open interoperability and almost the speed and appetite or risk-taking that industries are showing to be innovative, you know, and particularly here in Australia, it does disappoint me. I spent the last several years in my role with BHP based in Arizona developing autonomous equipment that is open interoperable across all different manufacturers. And I loved my time over there because the US environment is so entrepreneurial. And industry is prepared to take some risk and try technology. That's kind of, I think, a key challenge here in Australia is that we have a risk of being left behind if we don't start to take a few more risks.
But just on that, see, I've thought of that a few times as well, and I completely agree on that. Like the entrepreneurship that you see in US compared to here. Yes, much lesser population over here, but still, relatively, there's a lot of talk that happens about property and less about the entrepreneurship in this country, right? But what can be done to improve it, especially with the new youngsters that are coming into the industry? What needs to be done?
Yeah, well, as I said, I think to a degree, there's a little bit of responsibility in us as parents. I have three kids, and so it's probably one of the most important things you do is shaping your child's early learning experience is your role as a parent. And having that, I guess, entrepreneurial spirit, and I know not everybody is out there starting up their own business, and I'm not saying that should be the case, but even in the way that we, talk about our job if we're working for an enterprise, how do we, give that leadership shadow to our children around the things that we do in our workplace and can do to drive change, you know, and create opportunity for this country. So, yeah, I'm kind of pretty keen on parents stepping up a little more, because I do think some of the buck does stop there. But equally, I think the government has been missing in action. in my, and I'm a big fan of Australia, you can tell, but I think a bit missing in action around technology. Australia has focused on its mineral resource wealth, agricultural wealth and tourism. And because we haven't got a manufacturing heartland anymore, we lost it in steel manufacturing, car manufacturing, and actually innovation and is not, it correlates any country. If you look at their manufacturing output, innovation correlates with that. And we've lost that. So I think, and I think they're, you know, it's dropped from 30% of GDP to 5% GDP over the last 30 years for Australia in our manufacturing. And that's shocking. And so essentially our innovation and entrepreneurial spirit correlates with that 30% to 5% drop, Jazz.
I think the other thing is they need to teach, and this is just my opinion, and I could be completely wrong, is it needs to be taught in schools or colleges that it's okay to fail. It's when you, it's, people are scared of failure. Just go and try. You fail. It's not the end of the world. At a certain age, it's pretty good to experiment and try different things, kind of thing, to see what comes out.
Don't forget, our education system is built on a base. You try to educate and you try to produce workers for the society. That's how it's currently being structured, though. It's not being set up the way to build more entrepreneurs, as what you said. That's why there's a lot more, I guess, entrepreneurial courses that's beyond the school education system currently in place, right? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, society needs these people to produce as workers, you know, to be able to produce outcomes and results and GDP. So that's how the education system is being done today. But as you said, Jazz, I think there needs to be a transformation of some sort.
Yeah.
As we move into the new age of AI or co-working with AI improvements.
I think COVID is going to make countries realize a lot anyways in terms of heavily relying on one country like China or whatever country. Mm. It's not really the safest and the best approach. So I think that will change things quite a lot. Like pharmaceuticals, I think you and I were discussing at one point, 95% of the pharmaceuticals, some stupid number, comes from China. So just relying on medicine from one country, that's scary.
That's exactly right, Jazz. And, you know, I think sovereign capability and supply chain security is absolutely the two most things that have come up from COVID. And probably no one's really thought of a lot in a lot of countries, although I do think prior to this, certainly America obviously had some issues with China, and I think they were starting to recognise, you know, that they needed to sort their supply chain security. But AI and robotics is a case in point. You know, we at the moment as Australia are importing all of our capability from the US. Mm-hmm. And the ability to maintain it from the US. And if we do not build our own capability, when you're talking about a smart city, well, all of a sudden your autonomous vehicle, if we go through another type of pandemic moment, you know, it stops. We won't be able to maintain it. You'll need something to fix it. And we won't have our own capability in that more, you know, new AI or digital world. So it's one of the things I've been driving with the governments here in Australia a lot, is that we have to build, you know, our own capabilities, you know, particularly in these areas that underpin our major industries like forestry, mining and ag. Field robotics is, you know, something that we have to have local capability for, or at a point, those industries kept going this time around because they actually, to tell you the truth, are not very advanced with technology, but they are quickly accelerating into a, you know, advanced technology. And so in 10 years' time, if we don't have that, you know, sovereign capability, then we actually won't see them helping us out of the hole of, you know, a financial crisis. Like we, you know, they really have been our backstop a little bit through the COVID, but that might not be the case in the future if we don't build our own technology capability here.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Before we jump into some of the other stuff, what else in the AI space can we touch on that will be helpful for investors as well, who are trying to invest their money? Because when we started this podcast, it was just purely property. We branched out into some of the other asset classes and now some of the advanced technologies as well. To me, innovation is an asset class in itself. You invest in innovation and startups and you get your results if the company does well, right? From an investor's perspective, what should they be seeking out for if they are looking for opportunities to create this entrepreneurial culture where they can actually go and invest some of the money in these companies? Like, what sort of things they should be on the hunt for looking at these companies, some of these AI companies?
Yeah, I think it's, Jez, I mean, one thing that's, you know, good now is Australia, actually, you guys are probably more the expert in this than me, but, you know, the ASX now has a ticker for Australian technology. It's called ATEC. I joined WebEx the other day learning about ATEC. So, you know, I strongly encourage investors, you know, to also consider investing in your, you know, in Australian capability for technology. As I said, if you want this company to be fruitful in the future, then certainly investing in that portfolio is a good thing to do. And then probably the only other, I'm a very practical person, Jazz, and so, you know, when I tie technologies, for me, it's as much about, you know, track record for deployment, you know, and as you said, it doesn't even have to have worked. I just want to see companies that are actually out there with some experience that they're working on industry problems with their technology. A lot of technology companies might look really sexy, and frankly, their share price might go up really fast, you know, at the start. But if there's no demand, they're not solving a problem, you know, in society, which clearly Zoom showed in COVID, but these other technologies for industry, if they're not solving a, you know, forestry or agricultural problem today, you know, so you want to see them actually have relationships, partnerships. You know, I can't emphasize the word partnerships enough, particularly if they're startups and SMEs. They need to be, you know, it'd be one of the first things I'd be looking for is what industries and what companies they're partnering with, because that's really the only way that they're going to be, I guess, ruggedizing their technology and really testing it out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's really good. David, you got any more questions in the airspace, buddy? Shana, anything you want to add from an AI perspective that working in that space actively is interesting?
No, probably just I'm a big fan of diversity and inclusion, and I think what people must remember is that one type of AI is called machine learning. And there's people who are experts in this, which isn't me, but when you think about some of these things, I mean, machine learning is an approach to, you know, it's used in autonomous vehicles as another way to actually emulate some of the behaviours and ways that people, the brain is an amazing thing. And so there's things that you can actually code, and then there's actually things that actually are too hard to code, and machine learning is being used to build that capability into machines based on people and how good the brain is. But you have to remember with machine learning is if we don't have a diverse workforce, and I'm not just talking gender here, I'm talking, you know, ethnicity, experience, age, then machine learning will fail because it will be only learning from one type of person in the workplace. So so I always try and keep these issues of diversity and inclusion front and centre for people, not only because it makes a great place to work, you know, for where we all are, but equally the technology will have its flaws if we don't continue to pursue diversity.
Oh, that's awesome. Really good. Let's switch gears a little bit.
Here we go.
You are a member of Space Industry Forum.
Yes.
Give us a little bit of insight of what happens in that space before I ask any of the questions.
Here we go.
What do you guys talk about? We found this alien today, but we're not going to tell anybody about it. There was a real frequency. We're going to keep it secret, otherwise people will go. What cooks in there?
Yeah, so the Australian Space Agency is fairly new. Thankfully, Australia recognised we have great capability in the work we do in space, but it was very fragmented. So hence they built the Australian Space Agency only probably less than 2 years ago. And I'm an industry advisory member of that group. And really, I don't get as involved in the high-end technical things that will obviously see us, you know, be able to launch a mission to Mars as much. But what we're trying to do is It's a little bit like me talking about, you know, mining being a smart city pilot. So what we're trying to do is connect technologies that are here on Earth with those challenges that equally will be experienced in space. So we talk about space to Earth and Earth to space. So space is obviously doing a lot in connectivity, communications. That's a gap for countries like Australia and Canada and anywhere that's very rural. So they're bringing a lot of the connectivity improvements and lowering of cost, which is also a big barrier around connectivity for some of these industries. So they bring that to us. And then what we're looking at in on Earth is what are the things that we're doing that we can accelerate those technologies to improve space missions. So things like remote operation centres, asset management, doing that remotely using, you know, robotics and these things, because obviously when you're out in space, you're going to be using a hell of a lot of robotics to actually maintain space stations and things like that. So, yeah, so it's really a partnership and an exchange and acceleration of technologies between the space and the Earth programs of work.
Mm-hmm. Do you see us as humans branching out to other planets and actually creating life over there?
Yeah. Okay. So
we're already trying it, kind of.
Yeah. Well, as I said, you can see I'm a miner from way back. So I'm kind of hoping we find other life form out there, Jazz. But we certainly will be working our tenement agreements with them, because they will own that land that we find and that we will want to mine sometime in the future. So certainly when we come across aliens, which I'm sure we will, I hope we manage well and with good ethics, the approach to mining their asteroids, because certainly that's, you know, that is one of the areas that, you know, could be a little way off, but, you know, there is a lot of focus on acquiring resources in space.
So you're obviously a believer in aliens. Now we don't even have to ask that question.
I'm a believer. I'm a believer. Exactly. You can't be in the space agency and not.
Go to the next question related to it. Are they smarter than us, do you think?
Jazz, you know, I think they have to be, because, you know, they tend to avoid us. You know, we haven't been able to, I suppose, engage with them as much as we would like so far. So it kind of makes me think that they're pretty smart and work out a way to avoid us.
Do you think they're actually controlling us?
No, I don't think so. And I think no one will control us. I know people worry about AI, but I think aliens must be very good in the area of music and the arts, because as AI progresses, it actually won't matter whether you, everyone will be as smart as each other, because obviously we'll have that wonderful chip inserted in our brain, and it's all about music and the arts. So I'm quite sure the aliens have already worked that out and probably are the most wonderful musicians.
Mm-hmm. So technology is available in abundance, and we can tell that with the pace of growth that we have seen that in the last 10, 15, 20 years, whatever the time frame is, right? Do you see it causing deflation down the line rather than inflation? Because everything will be technology-based, whether it's AI or whatever else, right? That means we are going down the path of deflation, not inflation, due to it available in abundance.
Yeah, I think so. And obviously, Jazz, the you know, I think the world will, as we've seen a little bit through COVID, it'll start to reach a more uniform platform kind of, you know, and connectedness that, you know, at the moment you can have some countries in inflation and some in deflation, whereas one would have to think as technology advances that actually also levels out, you know what I mean, across, you know, all the economies. So so I think you're right. I think we will move to, you know, to an era of deflation as because of it.
Mm-hmm. Crypto, here to stay or a fad?
I'm going to go. It's a bit of a fad, you know. I don't know. What do you think, Jazz? Is that, you know, what's your thoughts on crypto? Are you in the fad area?
I'm not in the fad area. I think there's a lot of scammy projects in this space.
Yep.
And the legit ones are going to change the finance world forever. in not too distant future, probably. Mm-hmm. When I say not too distant, I still we're still talking 10 to 15 years,
yep.
But it will change the shape of the finance. And that's going to happen. And that sort of relates back to one of the points that you mentioned before, which is the openness of the systems.
Mm-hmm.
And finance world is a very closed world.
Yes.
And this is all open source. So as we move towards that world of AI, IoT, it's naturally going to happen. This stage, it's more of a speculative asset class, but it will change over time. And probably give it another maybe 5 years, I'll say, max. Perception will change completely. And when you look at the people that are working in the space, they are the smartest minds. I mean, it's a hive of people that are in that space. They know their stuff. You look at Vitalik, who is the founder of Ethereum, one of the cryptocurrencies. He's 19 years old. The guy is not a scammer. There's people working in this space that are super smart, who are passionate about changing the finance world and making it better. It's just too early, so people don't understand it completely, is what I think.
Well, I think you're right, Jason. I think with a lot of technologies, it's about demystifying that so that the average person can actually understand how they can, you know, how these technologies can be applied to their world or to, you know, to the industry they're working in. Mm-hmm. I think that's often the problem I find with technologies. I spend much of my time translating and probably simplifying technologies, particularly for board and executive consumption, because, yeah, it's easy to be the technical guru in the room, but if you can't translate it in a simple sense and help people to understand, I mean, in these industries, it's pretty simple. It's about safety, cost, and productivity. So if I can't describe how my technology is going to influence one or all of those, then, you know, then I'm not doing a very good job of translating.
Before we wrap this up, Shana, last question that I have. Three things you want to be remembered for.
I would like to be remembered for my, you know, legacy of creating a Robotics Australia group, which I've actually just done, an NFP together with a few others to represent the Australian robotics industry and its advocacy.
Sorry to cut you, but okay. If you end up finding a way to implant it into humans to make them super smart, take me as the first one. My brain functions really slow, so I need to speed it up a little bit. The processor's pretty old in it.
I will do, Jazz. I'll put you on the top of our list. You know, I'd like to be remembered for being a good mentor, you know, and developer of others. You know, is certainly something else in life that's really important to me. I spend a lot of time mentoring people, you know, both professionally, you know, things about career development, but also personally. You know, and I guess the third thing I'd like to be remembered for is, you know, having, you know, lived a full life and, you know, and experienced and enjoyed the journey and all of its, you know, all of its ups and downs. You know, I was diagnosed with one of the worst grades of breast cancer in my late 30s. And so I guess that was something for me that just really, you know, made me realise, man, it's about the journey. You know, people just need to really, really enjoy that, and that will have downs as well as ups.
Awesome. Look, really appreciate your time. Before we wrap this up, David, you got anything else to add?
No, I think that's a good wrap.
Shana, I really enjoyed the conversation. As you guys progress in this space, I'll be really keen to know what's cooking and implant the chip when you get the chance.
You're welcome in the Imbello kitchen anytime, Jasmine.
To our listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. And if you are, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and let the word spread like a fire. Spark your fire. Cheers, Jazz and David.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.